This interview is for the Library of Congress Veterans War Project and looks at life on the home front. Okay, shall we start again?
Sure.
Oh, wait, you already started?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Whenever you're ready.
Okay, thank you. This interview is for the Library of Congress Veterans War Project and looks at life on the home front. Today is Wednesday, September 19, 2007, and we are in the studio of WILL in Urbana, Illinois. Linda Lou Ficklin Weber is the subject of this interview. My name is Harriet Williamson. Also in the studio is Marty Hodges, who's the director of lighting, sound, and camera. Linda, could you talk about where you were born and a little bit about your family and your early life?
I was born in Columbia, Missouri, and grew up there until I went to junior high, and then we moved to Boonville, Missouri, which was 20 miles west, and I graduated from high school there. My father was a school teacher in the high school where I was, and he did work at one point for help building a military camp in Warrensburg, Missouri, as a summer job, and so he was gone all summer. And I had a mother and two sisters and a brother, and my brother served in the Army later, and he was 2 years younger than I, and he served in the Army and then took the test for West Point and was appointed to West Point with an Army appointment. Mm-hmm. And
are you the oldest?
I'm the oldest. Mm-hmm.
And then you have two sisters, and is it two sisters and then a brother?
No, I was the oldest, and my brother was 2 years younger, and my sister was 4 years younger. Mm-hmm. Then I had a baby sister that was 20 years younger. So,
now, was your family, do you think, affected at all by the Depression?
Yeah.
In what ways?
My parents had bought a little house in Columbia, and I think their house payment was $60, and my dad made $80 a month or something like that, and it was pretty impossible. And then the Depression hit, and that would have been about in 29 or 30, and they lost the house. Mm-hmm. And I know the year that we moved to Boonville, which was, I've forgotten now, but I was going into junior high, and I know our Christmas was very, very simple. Mm-hmm. And that was because that was right after they lost the house. And yeah, my parents didn't have any money for a long time. My dad was a school teacher, and they weren't well paid anyway, and Mom stayed home, and they had lost the house, so they paid rent. Mm-hmm. So yes, it very much affected our family. I have pictures. I started to bring one of my parents and their siblings that look like Dust Bowl people, you know, like you've seen the people out in the Dust Bowl at that time. And so even in Missouri, I think there was a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. When did you become aware that there were clouds on the horizon regarding the possibility of war, either in Europe, Asia, and the possibility that United States would become involved in the war?
I don't think I really... I was like 13, 14, and I don't really remember much, although I must have known something, because I knew the Japanese ambassadors were in Washington before Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. Trying to talk to the president. And I don't, unless that came out later, but that really stuck in my mind. And I don't know that I even knew anything much about the Holocaust. I remember the day of Pearl Harbor, we were in the car going to my grandmother's, and we had a radio in the car, and they announced it, and it was momentous. But that's probably about the first that I really realized mm-hmm. something was wrong.
Mm-hmm. When you were in school during the war, was your school affected by any wartime activities? Do you know, were classes changed, or
Was there a shortage of teachers or?
Not that I remember any of it. It was a high school of about 400, so it probably wasn't impacted too much. Mm-hmm. I think we had one, the music teacher, I think, went off to war. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as we graduated, the boys all went off to the war, almost all of them. Mm-hmm. The only other thing I remember about that time is that we had a lot of German farmers in the area around town, and people would write nasty things on their barns, paint graffiti on their barns about "Go back, Nazi" or something. Although they weren't Nazis, they were immigrants who were farming in the area, but they were German, and some of them probably first or second generation German, mm-hmm. and so they did get a lot of that. It was a small town. It was. You just weren't conscious. I know there were black people in the town, but I didn't even know where they lived. And I know they had a school, and I didn't know where the school was. And the town had a population of 6,000, and mm-hmm. we still had no consciousness of any of that. And I've looked back to see if I remembered anything about Jewish people, and I don't. If there were Jewish people in town, I didn't even know who they were. So. Mm-hmm. We weren't very conscious, or at least the kids weren't, I don't know. And my parents evidently didn't talk about it, because, except that day in the car, I know that was very upsetting, that was Pearl Harbor that was on the radio. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I don't remember them talking, and I don't know that I read newspapers very much, so...
How did the war affect your family in terms of either the food you were eating or the way you got around in terms of transportation or in just daily life?
I know there was some question about gas, but I don't know that it ever limited us. And food became more and more of a problem. A lot of things we didn't have. That came in more later, though, towards the end of the war for me. I don't remember it as when I was in high school.
For example, what were some of the things that you didn't have?
Meat became, we had the ration books, I know those, with the stamps, mm-hmm. and meat was an issue. Chocolate, which I love, was very difficult to get. Sugar was hard to get. Seems to me butter was, but I'm not real certain.
Mm-hmm. Now, you brought with you this ration mm-hmm. book from World War II. How does that work? What is in a ration book?
Well, they had stamps. They had so many stamps, and you could only use so many stamps a month. And, you know, I don't really remember even which book this was. At the close of the war, I was working in a grocery store, so I dealt more with this mm-hmm. because things were still very short then, and the sugar and the coffee and I know meat was one of them, and chocolate. I love chocolate, so that was an issue. But if we got an order, it went under the counter for the regular customers, mm-hmm. and even the regular customers had to have stamps to get certain things.
Mm-hmm. So would a book then be specified for a certain item, like a sugar book or a meat book? Or is it a general kind of thing?
I think so, because the other little books that I gave you were my brother-in-law's books, and they were, they've got different numbers and things. Mm-hmm. But that was 60 years ago, and I've kind of forgotten.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But I know they were important, and I know you really, even if you were a good customer at the grocery store, you still had to have your books. You still had to have the stamps.
Now, did life improve as a result of the war and people going back to work, or was it still, do you think it was still hard times on the home front?
Well, it flipped at that point because... I had gone to, I'm trying to switch here, because I had gone to college for a year, and then I was sent to Purdue University by Curtis Wright, who built airplanes. Mm-hmm. And they trained us for a year at Purdue, and then I went to work in the war plant in Columbus, Ohio. And then my mom got sick, so I went back home. So I got involved again with the food stamps and the groceries mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. And it was, things were... had to go on a list to get a car. And I think when we first went on the list, we were number 3,000 or something in St. Louis to get a car. And you had to, appliances were not available. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of things you still couldn't get. But I don't remember, I mean, it was just a fact of life. Mm-hmm. I don't remember resenting it because mm-hmm. it was just part of the war. And we were taught and trained and believed that that was our part that we mm-hmm. could do.
Mm-hmm. Where did that come from? Did it come from your teachers, or did it come from listening to the radio, or how do you think you received that message?
Well, I think probably a couple of ways. I think it was promoted by the government a lot, but I think too we felt it because the girls didn't go to war and families basically didn't go to war, and my father was too old to go to war, so my brother was in the service, but basically we felt we had to do whatever we could to help. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was just kind of a feeling that you were part of it. Even in high school, we collected gum wrappers for the foil, and we had scrap metal drives and picked up scrap metal and turned it in because mm-hmm. that was something we could do.
Now, how often would those drives occur, and who were you turning the materials into?
Well, I think it was basically done through the school, but I'm not sure where it went from there. But mm-hmm. but it was used, and we went all over asking for metal and picking up scrap metal, but it was just kind of fun for us to do that. And collecting the gum wrappers was fun because if you chewed gum, you were doing something for the for the war. The only piece when the war ended, they had trained us to work on the airplanes, and we moved to Columbus, Ohio. I did bring the picture of my group, and they trained. Mm-hmm. Curtis Wright trained over 500 girls because the men were all in service. They had no draftsmen. They had no checkers, so they trained us . And we went to Columbus to work for them. But the minute the war was over, we were all discharged because the men came home mm-hmm. and the women went home. Mm-hmm. So that was all right with me, but it was, I know some of my friends were really upset by it because mm-hmm. those were pretty good jobs. Mm-hmm. And then I got affected because my mom got very ill, and the war hadn't ended. The war in Japan hadn't ended. But I had to go home and help my mom, and they wouldn't give me a release from the war job. Mm-hmm. Even though the doctor wrote a letter and my dad wrote a letter, they still wouldn't accept it. And so I couldn't get a release, which meant that when I went back to St. Louis, that I couldn't get a job. And I did wind up working in a grocery store because my mom had a friend who had a grocery mm-hmm. store. But for some of my friends who filled the whole time there, I was short of just a month or two, but the ones that stayed to the very end, to be chopped off like that and then go home, mm-hmm. it was pretty difficult. Mm-hmm. I think there was one of our friends that actually got to stay, but other than that, they sent everybody home.
I want to come back to that in just a minute. Now, you were in high school when you were recruited to go to Purdue, is that correct?
No, you had to have a year of college. I had gone to college.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Culver Stockton in Canton, Missouri. It's a small private school. We had about 200 girls and 17 boys because there weren't any boys. Mm-hmm. When I went to Purdue, they had all kinds of military there. So I think we had 50 or 60 boys to every girl because they Purdue was basically a male school except for home ec majors, but we were there in aeronautical engineering. Mm-hmm. So there still weren't that many girls, and they had Navy people, Marines, everybody there because mm-hmm. they were training them too. So it affected campus life a great deal in both schools. I mean, they're just, well, it does to a 16-year-old girl.
Now, you were 16 when you were in college and recruited?
No, I was, that was in 44, I would have been 18. I had a year of college.
Right.
Because they wanted
When you were in college, did somebody come to your school and recruit people in your school?
No, they put an ad in the newspaper, and my father found the ad, and they still didn't have any money, my parents. And so this was a free year at Purdue University, which had a wonderful name. Mm-hmm. And you had to be a math major. You had to have made good grades and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I qualified. So I answered the ad and passed the test. And then I got to go to Purdue. Mm-hmm. It was a wonderful year.
Now, who was it that put the ad in? Was it a government agency?
Curtis Wright.
Curtis Wright, okay.
Curtis Wright mm-hmm. was building airplanes.
Okay. When you went to Purdue, then what were you studying under?
Aeronautical engineering.
Okay, so what would be the classes that you would take, for example?
We had a lot of drafting because that was what they wanted us to do physically when we got there, but we had every math class they had. We had physics, calculus, analyt. And then we had aeronautical engineering because we actually were in wind tunnels and mock airplanes. Uh-huh. And it was great. We had the regular university professors, and so we were well trained.
Mm-hmm. Now, was it intense? In other words, did they try and speed it up for you and give
they
you
did.
More?
Yeah, we were there from September to March, and we got a full year. Mm-hmm. And I had a full year's credit from Purdue. Mm-hmm. It was very speeded up, and it was intense, and it was heavy on math and physics. So we studied, but we had a great time, too. They even bought us activity passes, so we got to do everything and paid for the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So
you also were able to participate in other social activities with the young men who were on campus.
Yeah, all the ball games, and they had bands and different things came there. I mean, it was a great year.
Then when you completed that time in March, then did you go to Columbus to work in the Curtis Wright factory?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So when you got to Columbus, what was the expectation that you would be doing when you were there?
Well, we started out in drafting, just doing, that was back when drafting was done with linen and ink and I had a couple of those saved, but I think I washed them out because it was linen and I could make clothes out of linen. But it was ink and it was real drafting. It wasn't done on a computer. And we did that. And then I got promoted. Several of us got promoted to being checkers. And we would check other people's work. Mm-hmm. And then my one friend who did stay, I know, went on up in the company. She was very good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My mom actually got pregnant, but she didn't. That was back in the days when you didn't talk about things like that. So she just kept writing me letters saying she was sick. And I'd write back and say, what's wrong? She wouldn't answer me. And then finally my dad said he needed me to come home because I did have two younger brothers. I had a younger brother and younger sister. So I went home, and first thing I asked my mom was what was wrong, because I thought she had cancer or something, and she said she was pregnant. And I cracked up. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was funny. But I guess she thought I wouldn't approve or something, because they had friends who had the same situation, and the kids moved out. So, but I thought it was wonderful.
Now, were you disappointed, though, that you had to come home and give up your work?
Yeah, that part was kind of hard, because we were enjoying what we were doing and felt like it was important.
And the aircraft that you were working on, what was it?
The Helldiver, and I gave you a couple pictures of that, because they've got one hanging at Midway Airport in Chicago right now Well, I guess it's still there. It was there last year. Anyway.
So those were fighter planes?
They were fighter planes.
And were they used in both Europe and in Japan? Or Asia, I should say?
I would imagine. Mm-hmm. I would imagine they were. I'm sure they had to be. I don't think we thought about what their use was going to be. We were just doing them for the government, for our country. Mm-hmm. No, we felt very, very good about what we were doing.
Mm-hmm. How many women did you say were?
Well, they trained 500, but the group I was with at Purdue was about 35. And we lived in a frat house because all the guys were gone. It was a whole different world, you know. And all the boys were gone, so they had the fraternity houses available. And so we lived in our own frat house, and we got very close. Mm-hmm. And we had a reunion a couple of times since that. And and it was also intense, as you said, because, you know, analytic geometry and all the physics courses. I don't know that I remember a thing about them now, but they were hard at the time. But we did well and had a lot of fun, too.
Did the remaining women who didn't go to Columbus, to Curtis Wright, did they go to other places in the U.S. to work in other?
I think we all went to Columbus. Mm-hmm. They had different groups, so because they did about 500 girls, and some of them went to other universities. And But Curtis Wright, the plant at Columbus, Ohio, was one of their big plants. Mm-hmm. And evidently they didn't have any men there to draw, to do the drawings, and they had to have the drawings to build the plane. So,
now, you were in your adolescence, and the war was getting underway and going. How did that, and, you know, we kind of think of adolescence as a time which is a little more carefree, and you have fun activities as well as going to school. Did that disappear for you when you were growing up, do you think?
Not exactly. I mean, you didn't have a lot of dates. I mean, there were a few guys that were exempt for one reason or another. But at that time, too, in the dormitories, they were all girls. I mean, we didn't have mixed dorms. And so we got to be very good friends with other women, and that was very important. Mm-hmm. And there were a few guys on campus. I always seemed to have a boyfriend, at least one. And then my other friends that were in service, they wrote letters back, and so we kept the connection. Mm-hmm. I think we just accepted all of it, much more than I would accept it now. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it was just, the boys were doing what they had to do, and so we enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed being with the girls, it was just, I know we accepted it, just accepted a lot of things that I would not accept today. So,
well, I would imagine that some of the things that you have said, for example, being closer with women because of men being in the service, and then also working in an important position in an airplane plant, and this being an experience that many women had, how do you think women and yourself, how do you think people felt after the war was over and you had to return to kind of the old way where women were not held in such high esteem?
I think at the time it was fine because I grew up and my whole goal in life was to get married and have 4 children, and women didn't work outside the home very much, not unless they really had to. And so it was just fine. The guys were all coming home, and that part was all right. I've wondered since that, though, because I've become very active with women's groups and feminist groups and very active in anti-war groups. And I've wondered, I think some of that had to come from way back there, that because it was ugly and it was a bad thing, and we did lose friends, and you know, looking back at the time, you're just doing it, and it was everyone was doing it, and So I remember my dad was a coach at the high school too, and he lost one of his boys, and I remember that that was a very black time. Mm-hmm. He was killed on one of the islands in the Pacific, and then as each and the boys, I think, were more changed than we were, because they had been in the war, and when they'd come home, things were a little different. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of fun at Purdue simply because they had all the military there. I mean, we were 50 to 1. I mean, so that part, that was good. The area at Culver Stockton, where it was mostly girls, is more where I remember being with. Well, even in Purdue, we had our own house, and, mm-hmm. and we were together. Mm-hmm. So I think it was kind of a foundation for women friendships and being part of a women's whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's true for everybody, but I think for me it was just more a matter of this is the world, this mm-hmm. is where we were, just accepting, and this is what we needed to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember any anti-war protests or anything. We just did it.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to talk at all about any of your friends or schoolmates who were in the war, or about any of the correspondence you had during that period?
I think that probably was boring. I did write to, I mean, I had several boyfriends, and I wrote to them, of course, but I also wrote to some of the other boys that were in our high school, just mm-hmm. because we mm-hmm. felt that was something we could mm-hmm. do. But I don't know, I sometimes wondered if our letters were even helpful. I mean, we just wrote, you know, because everyone wrote letters then. I don't mm-hmm. write letters anymore, but I mean, once in a while. But that was the contact we had. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have TV, we didn't have emails, we didn't mm-hmm. do telephones, and so we wrote letters. But it was important, we felt it was important to write mm-hmm. those letters.
Mm-hmm. Thinking about Germans and Japanese, how do you think people in the U.S. felt, or maybe people in your town or yourself felt about them during the war and after the war?
I don't remember. Like I said, I've tried to reconstruct, even mm-hmm. like I think there was a jeweler in our town named Piper, and I thought, well, he might have been Jewish. And I did finally find out where the black high school was. Mm-hmm. We didn't do that. I mean, mm-hmm. it wasn't an issue. And the slogans and things they put on the barns, I think those were just kind of rare things, because mm-hmm. my friends were German, and we weren't. I wasn't that far from being Norwegian and Swedish and mm-hmm. English and whatever. I'm about Heinz 57, but we all had families that came over here, mm-hmm. and so I don't remember. And we didn't have any Japanese in town, mm-hmm. being in Missouri, but I don't remember any. I really don't remember anybody saying anything mean. It was just, I do remember the stuff that was painted on the barns, mm-hmm. and the farm boys too could get exempted from the war, which if they were needed on the farm, mm-hmm. and I think some of the high school boys may have resented that. I don't know. I mean, my hunch is that was more. And I may be wrong, but that it was more young men that painted those things.
Mm-hmm. Were the schools segregated at that time in Missouri?
Yeah.
Okay.
Although my dad's team played, that's the other funny part, my dad's team played the black high school team, mm-hmm. but we still somehow never recognized that it was in town. I mean, it was...
Mm-hmm. Very separate?
Very separate, and mm-hmm. and not even curious about it, and never a real issue either. I mean, but we had very little connection, so mm-hmm. I mean, that's from the white side of the picture. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it would be a different story for a black kid.
Now, when you came back from Columbus, you started working in a store. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, was rationing still in effect then?
Yeah, it went on for a while. And then, like with the cars, you signed a list. Mm-hmm. And I think our number, because we had just gotten married, and our number was 2,000 and something in St. Louis, which meant we would be waiting a long time. But my husband had a friend who had a little number, and he didn't need the car, so we got his number. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, we could have waited 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I did get the last piece of satin in St. Louis for my wedding dress. Oh. My mom made the wedding dress, mm-hmm. and that was after the war, but it was the last piece of satin they had in the big department store.
Oh, my goodness.
So there were a lot of things. And we couldn't get nylons. We painted our legs. You've probably heard that story with brown goop, and so...
When were nylons then available? When did they?
It was a while, because I know we used that brown. It's almost like powder base, you know. You just spread it all over your legs, so your legs were brown and looked like you had hose on. And I think we used that probably all through the 2 years of college. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you were working in the grocery store and there was rationing, would you have to have a ration card to buy everything, or was
no.
it was just the items that you had mentioned, the sugar and meat and things like that?
There was quite a list. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to remember what all. It seemed like soap was on there, but like laundry soap. But my boss, it was a small grocery store, and he just said put certain things under the counter for the regular customers, because mm-hmm. people would come into the store and they had the list of the things that they couldn't get, mm-hmm. and that's all they wanted to buy. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, we needed to save it for our good customers. And so we had a number of things, and like chocolate might come in every 2 or 3 weeks. We'd mm-hmm. get some chocolate, and coffee was, I remember those two particularly that were unavailable.
What does it mean to be a good customer? Is that someone who came in and...
Somebody came in at least other times. Uh-huh. Or if they had come in and bought a bunch of groceries, then I might have been able to offer them, you know, mm-hmm. some... But the people that just came just for the things that were hard to get, he didn't want me to give them to him, so... Mm-hmm.
Do you know if there... Or were you aware of black marketing?
I've heard the word, and I know it must have gone on. I have nothing mm-hmm. personal about it. Yeah.
Were people in Missouri, were they well acquainted with Senator or Vice President, President Truman? Do you know, since he was from...
Well, we liked Truman because he was from Missouri and pretty plain spoken and mm-hmm. seemed to be... doing a good job. Again, I was 17, 18 at that point, mm-hmm. not very knowledgeable, and but he was a hometown boy sort of thing, mm-hmm. and not being too involved, but we always voted. I mean, we were good citizens. I mean, if you meet people from Missouri about that time, we all tried to be good. Mm-hmm. And it was just more a shock to me as a teenager to have a different president, because I just thought it was kind of like King Roosevelt, you know. He'd been there forever. And
do you remember when the first atomic bomb was dropped? Did you have any remembrance of that?
I'm sure I do, and I it is a day that will live in infamy. I mean, I think everyone was shocked over that mm-hmm. and what it meant. And I did get to go back to Japan in 1980 for 6 weeks on a peace exchange, and So that's what the banner that I showed you was mm-hmm. from. And we talked to some of the survivors and met a lot of people there, and it was very tragic. Yeah.
Where did you travel when you were in Japan? Was that the first time you were there?
We started in Hiroshima. Hiroshima, they have a World Friendship Center, and they mm-hmm. had set up a peace exchange with teachers. And at that time, I was a school counselor, so that qualified. And they brought four of us over there, and then the next year, they'd send four Japanese teachers to our country, and they're still doing it. And mm-hmm. It was great. We had to pay our own transportation, but they provided housing from people that believed in them. So we stayed in everything from a pig farm to a penthouse to a little one-room tiny apartment in Tokyo. It was great. Mm-hmm. A lot of old houses. And they have stories, very definitely. I have stories about the war and about the bombing, and that was a very powerful trip.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to talk about any of the survivors of Hiroshima that you met?
Right now my mind is blank. I just know the ones that were actually there when the bomb dropped, and then we saw the movies, and then they have a museum there in Hiroshima that mm-hmm. I came home saying I thought everybody in the world ought to walk through that museum mm-hmm. because the actual aftermath of the damage that the bomb caused is just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Holocaust was horrible, but it was a different way. I mean, and it's a different way, but the bomb was instant, and people just disintegrated, mm-hmm. literally. They have somewhere, they just have shadows where people had been. The bodies completely disappeared. They have they still have a number of Hibakusha who were survivors of the dropping of the bomb. Mm-hmm. But they're all sickly and have been for years. And to imagine being there with this bomb coming down and wiping out, I've forgotten the number, 300,000 or 500,000 or something like that, people instantly, children in schools and families and a woman in her garden and just gone. It was a horrible thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it accomplished, other than creating another weapon of some kind. Well, they claim it ended the war, but I think it could have ended without that. And the second bomb in Nagasaki was just testing another bomb, and it did the same thing, killed people like that. Just burned them and blasted them. No, I've wondered how my life and my story have affected my whole life, because now I'm very much anti-war, anti-racism. I got my doctorate in peace and justice, and it's still number one on my list, so I don't think war, I think war is an evil thing.
Would you like to talk about your studies and your doctorate and how you've used them?
Well, I got my doctorate at a seminary, Bethany Seminary in Oak Brook, up by Chicago, mm-hmm. and I did it in peace and justice. Mm-hmm. And so I am an ordained minister, too. I mean, they didn't actually give me any courses in being an ordained minister, but since I did it at mm-hmm. the seminary, I became an ordained minister. And it was a pretty, again, intensive study in peace and justice, and read a lot of readings and writings mm-hmm. about that. No, I just think, and we got involved. we've been protesting for years. We started with Martin Luther King in the Vietnam War and mm-hmm. are still very much against the Iraqi war. And I just think there are other answers than war and killing people, and better, much better answers. So I've belonged to a lot of different groups, and I have spoken many places and get in trouble every once in a while.
Is there anything else you would like to talk about the war and how it affected your life or the lives of your family or friends?
That's a heavy one. I was going to tell you a funny one first.
Okay.
When the man I married, I didn't know him beforehand, but when he came back and I had started writing to him because his sister and her husband were good customers at the grocery store, and they mm-hmm. said I should write to their brother. And actually some of the other customers did that too, so I wrote letters there. I wrote a lot of letters. But when he came back from service, we decided we liked each other, and he had been in the Navy Air Corps. He was a pilot in the Navy Air Corps. But we didn't have a car of any kind. He didn't have a car of any kind. My family had one car. So, but his stepfather had a old truck, a panel truck of some kind. He was a painter, and he had one seat in it, and then he could put a box in it so somebody could be a passenger. No seat belts, just the box you could sit on. So we went to the Chase Hotel one time for something very special. It was the high spot in St. Louis at the time. So I got all dressed up, and we went down in this panel truck, and I sat on the box. It was like a wooden milk carton box, all dressed up. And we pull up at the Chase Hotel and give it to the man to park the car. We always thought that was a funny story. Because I can't imagine anyone doing that now. But at the time, nobody had cars. And so you got there however you could. So.
Now, did your romance with your future husband begin through your correspondence, do you think?
Sort of, although it was just another letter. Mm-hmm. I mean, but when he came back... when he came back, then we went out, and I think he proposed on the third date, and we were married 3 months later, and we've been married 61 years, and have 4 children, so.
So you got your 4 children.
I got married, and I had my 4 children, yeah.
Is there anything else you would like to talk about?
I don't know, this has been interesting, because I'm sure you're aware, too, that you do forget lots of things. And mm-hmm. so I've been, since this was set up, I've been trying to remember, and a lot of it I really don't remember, a lot mm-hmm. of details. Mm-hmm. But the things that I do remember are kind of fun to remember mm-hmm. and kind of put my life back together a little bit in different ways. That those things were part of my life and probably did affect a lot of mm-hmm. what... where I am now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Weber.